Welcome back to Through the Word. Today we'll be covering intro number 2 for the Book of Kings. As we said in the last session, this is an intro not only to the history of Israel, really, but it's also a good framework to hang all of the prophets on. Every single one of the prophets is going to be speaking either to the northern or the southern kingdom, or the exiles in Babylon, or the exiles coming back from Babylon, like Daniel and Ezekiel. In case that confuses you, let me just give you a potted history again. Now, when the kingdom splits in two after Solomon dies, his son takes the kingdom in the south, and Jeroboam, the foreman of the temple building project, who has all the workers' support under him, takes the northern kingdom, the majority of it, and they go to the north. Now, the northern kingdom never worships God. In fact, they're pagans from day one. But the southern kingdom is intermittently back on track and then off it again. So when the prophets go to the northern kingdom, their message is, repent, you pagans, repent, or you're going to be destroyed. Well, the Assyrians come in and they destroy the northern kingdoms. Meanwhile, they try to take the southern kingdom and it doesn't work because Hezekiah seeks God and God whoops up on the Assyrians. So the kingdom of Judah in the south lives to fight another day, but they don't keep seeking God. So like the book of Judges, we see the cycle continuing of good king, bad king, and all along the way, the prophets keep calling the people back to God so that they don't get destroyed. The southern kingdom does not get wiped out like the northern kingdom did. Now, when the prophets come, they prophesy things like, hey, God swore himself to you. He'll never leave you or forsake you. So he'll leave you as a remnant. And although you get carried away to Babylon, there you'll call out to me and God will bring you back. And of course, God does. And then they resettle in the land. And there we have the 400-year silent period until Jesus appears. That's your potted Bible history that helps you fit the book of 1 Kings into the rest of the Bible and the timeline of history. You'll get a front row seat to it as it all unfolds. Perhaps that doesn't seem fun to watch something like this, but I'll tell you something I learned by being a little brother. If you pay attention and keep your eyes peeled, you'll learn from your older siblings' mistakes and save yourself a lot of pain. Reading the Book of Kings can give you a ton of wisdom for avoiding your own fall and ensuring that you don't make the same mistakes they did, because trust me, you're going to make your own mistakes. Better not to repeat theirs. Good thing we have another king, right? Gotta pause and thank Jesus, the covenant keeper, who came to save us covenant breakers. As you read the Book of Kings, I'll be sure to point out what kingdom we're in and why it matters. By the end of this, if you can trust me, you're going to understand so much about who fits where in the Bible. We'll meet Solomon and a host of other characters, the supervillains, and some notable prophets like Elijah and his sidekick, Elisha. I don't think he would appreciate being called that. But all of this and more lay ahead of us as we visit the Hall of Kings and recount their tales of valor, cowardice, and sometimes downright stupidity. That's the problem with kings. They're usually the firstborn. They didn't get to have older brothers like we talked about earlier. Now, there is a structure to the book. The entry of every king pretty much stays the same, but the length will vary. Sometimes a few kings don't reign long, and they share a chapter with a few other kings. At other times, a king's reign spans multiple chapters, like Solomon's, or the wicked King Ahab. Here's a structure that Kings uses every time a new king is introduced. Number one, here's a big word if you're ready for it, there's the synchronism, which basically means that the author tells you what age a king was and where he fits in his reign compared to the other kingdom. So if it's a northern kingdom, it's going to tell you the age of the king and at what year in the other king's reign he started. Then it'll tell you the length of that king's reign, the capital city he ruled from, the name of the queen mother, and by the way, that's only in the southern kingdom. Finally, the verdict. Were they a good king or a bad king? And because this book was written after these kings lived, we have a conclusion that gives the source citation. You'll see over and over a phrase like, and are not all of his deeds written in the book of the annals of the kings of Israel? And you've probably never read those books, and neither have I, and neither is anyone else today, because those books aren't around anymore. But in those days, they were well-known history books, but they weren't the Bible. They probably didn't have the spiritual commentary and the pattern that we see here. Then there's the death and burial, and finally, the notice of succession. In other words, who takes that king's place? Now, in the conclusion, the Bible occasionally skips some of the endings of these kings in the formula that I just described, and that's because those kings may have ended their reign in a really strange or unusual manner, like being assassinated or flying to heaven on a magical unicorn. Okay, that doesn't happen, but you'll just have to keep reading to see how all these kings meet their end. And as the book says, in the very beginning of David, go the way of all flesh. That's a fancy way of saying died. During the book of Kings, there's actually not just the reigns of the kings that's going on or the wars that they fight. There's also another war being fought. You could say an even more important war, and it involves key figures. We mentioned already Ahab, but Elijah and his apprentice, Elisha, are two prophets that God raises up to stand against Ahab and his wicked queen, Jezebel. In the Old Testament, these are the biggest villains the Bible has, other than Pharaoh. Ultimately, Elijah and Elisha will take their stand against wicked King Ahab, who's committed to his pagan ways. There's the showdown between Elijah and the Baals. And of course, God wins that showdown, because it's not really a showdown between Elijah and Baal. It's a showdown between the God of Israel and the pagan God. We'll see the ballad of Elijah and Elisha really unfold between 1 Kings chapter 17 all the way through 2 Kings chapter 10. As you read the book of 1 Kings, I know what's going to happen to you is you're going to constantly be asking, why all this drama? Why all this strife and this heartache? Why not just turn back to God? Gosh, dang it, why are these people so stupid? Why can't they be smart like me? All of us dumb people pretty much say the same thing, because as much as we read about what these kings did, we turn a blind eye to our own lives and how, well, maybe it could just be that simple for us. Turn back to God. Give Him everything. Lay your entire life down at His feet. Save yourself all the drama and the hardship. But make no mistake, even the kings who follow God here, oh, they've got a lot of heartache and trauma. They've got wars to fight and kingdoms to rule and people to deal with. It's no cakewalk. But following God makes all the difference in this book, because sometimes, even when the godly kings have a battle to fight, they don't do it alone. The first battle each one of us needs to fight is to put God first, to smash all of our idols, and to surrender completely to Him. That doesn't mean that we won't have other battles in life, but it definitely means that when we fight those battles, again, we don't fight them alone. Well, maybe take another swipe today at reading 1 Kings, and as you do, surrender to the King of Kings.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.